This podcast is for alcoholics that have a willingness to recover from their alcoholism by being taught and practicing the principles of the 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book and the 12 and 12 of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ilya, and I am an alcoholic. Page XIII, forward to first edition, first paragraph. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person, and besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. Up to page 83 in the Big Book, we've done step 9, and now what comes true? The ninth step promises, which I read at the end of the last podcast. So we've done the action steps 4 through 9, and in the first sentence of the promises, it says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development. So, what does the word painstaking mean? Okay, so let's look that up. Painstaking. Done with or employing great care and thoroughness. Some synonyms, I can't say that word, are painstaking attention to detail is another description, and careful, meticulous, thorough, diligent are a few more. So painstaking is painful. And the word pain is in there. And when you're meticulous and thorough, it means that you have to do something with great care. And that's what we have done in the past 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 is 6 steps. So what we need to understand is that taking pains to be closely attentive to details and meticulous and following directions, then we know that the ninth step promises are going to come true. So what comes true? The ninth step promises. Now, a good day at the beach is not the ninth step promises coming true. If you have a bad day and you can't control yourself emotionally, you know that the promises haven't come true because you're still in guilt and remorse and you get agitated and restless too easily. So that is not the acid test to staying in emotional balance. That's why we have the next step in the program, which is the 10th step. But the first thing that I should do is recap everything we've done up until this point, so you have a clear understanding of what we've done and what we're going to do to continue to grow spiritually in step 10. So newcomers talk about having a good day, like I said, and claim that all these ninth step promises came true. And they don't even know the promises. They haven't done the work, which is painstaking. And what do we have to do for 83 pages beforehand from the doctor's opinion to meet this painstaking word? We had to learn what it said here in the beginning of the book. We learned that this is a textbook and had to be studied. Then we had to understand what it says. And then we had to take action so we can live these steps. And what does that start to do for us? We start to have what kind of change? If you remember in the doctor's opinion, we start to have a psychic change. And what is the definition of a psychic change? What did we used to think? What do we use to think? Our mind. It's a mind change. Okay, some of us have a problem and we dwell on it in our mind. And some of us think and change our mind when we work this program. Some of us don't think and change their minds if they don't work this program. So in order to have a psychic change, you need to do everything prior to page 83. In the beginning, when I first got into the program, to talk about me for a minute, was that I didn't study this book. I didn't understand my disease. I worked the steps like they were a self-help program, as if I was a normal person. And guess what? It didn't work. I didn't drink, but I was in terrible emotional and mental pain. I hung out with people that thought the way I did, and I gave them advice on their problems, and they gave advice on my problems. Because we were sharing with each other. We were helping each other. Now, what's one mind that's sick advising another sick mind? Sick, sick, sick. Okay, so we learned that we have a disease when we read the book, and we learned that we're very sick people. It tells us that right in the foreword, in the first paragraph. But, you know, like I said in the first paragraph, who reads the foreword of any book? People who want to learn something read the foreword. The doctor's opinion tells us the physical and mental part of our disease. So what is that? Physical cravings, once we pick up and drink alcohol, we can't stop. That's the first part of the disease. The second is the mental obsession, is when we're not drinking, or even when we're drinking, we are in the poor me's or high elation. When we put down the drink, where is our disease? Our disease is in our mind, or in our psychic, or our psyche. We've got a sick mind or a sick psyche. In order to see our disease, what does the doctor tell us why we drank? Well, he says, for the effect. I read that in the first podcast. We either wanted more celebration, or we were restless, irritable, and discontent. And to get out of those feelings that gave us pain, we want to numb them, so we drank. And then we lied about our drinking. We couldn't tell the true from the false, and the doctor's opinion tells us there's one solution. And what is that in three words? An entire psychic change. All right, so the psychic change is required because we were full of what? Character defects. We were full of fear. We were self-centered. Selfish and self-pity. We had illusions and delusions. In other words, we were self-will run riot. Our actions got worse and worse, and we kept on doing the same thing over and over again. And that was what? Well, what do we call that? Well, step two says we'd be restored to sanity. So we're insane. We were insane, and we kept on trying to do the best we could through our ego and self-will to handle ourselves. Self-help books, psychiatrists did not give me permanent sobriety. So what does Carl Jung say about us? The mental psychologist. Well, as Bill Wilson says, he is one of the founding fathers of psychiatry. And what is it that we need, according to Jung? And Silkworth mentions it too. We need a spiritual experience. I tried to arrest my disease mentally. Other people went to the gym and they exercised. I read all kinds of books and went to psychiatrists. I didn't even know what spirituality was. I was a total agnostic and didn't even know it. When you said I had to have a God, I said, what kind of religious cult is this? I was arrogant, I was in denial, and I can work a program my way and not the AA program. That was my thinking and that was my decision. Okay, because of this insanity, my views on life got worse and worse. Okay, we read the bedevilments on page 52. So let's reread those. On page 52, we were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. So the second full paragraph says we had bedevilments. These were called troubles, negative outlooks on life. I had attachment to things that destroyed my thinking. When I finally figured out these were the opposite of the ninth step promises, which I uploaded the sheet to the Dropbox, correlating each bedevilment with a promise, I, of course, had to say I wasn't all of these. Obviously, I could make a living. I wasn't broke. So there's one that I didn't have a problem with. So there we are. I was fighting the promises even. I could make a great living. The problem is I didn't want to anymore. And making a living is more than just making money. I had to look to it and say, why did I want more and more when I had enough money? When there was plenty lacking in my relationships and my ability to get along with others. That's also making a living. So we have the bedevilments, and we've transformed them into the promises if we've done the work. Now you'll look at the sheet again at the Dropbox explaining the chart that shows on page 52. For each bedevilment, there is an opposite promise. So how did we get there to think opposite, right? How many steps to get there? Well, the bedevilment begins on step what? If you're listening, you remember the first, the second step podcast is where the bedevilments are mentioned. The bedevilments are mentioned in We Agnostics. So we had to go through steps 2 through 9 before we get what? The ninth step promises on page 83. We have to learn, we have to understand, and we have to take the action. And it's only 31 pages between there, between the bedevilments and the promises. Well, those 31 pages, if you can understand and take action overnight, then you're a genius. I commend you, because I don't know anybody who's been able to understand those 31 pages with mixing in the 12 and 12 as well, so that you can say there's even more pages, and achieve the ninth step promises. Because a chronic alcoholic, under the definition of Carl Jung, one of the founding fathers of psychiatry, okay, said he had no cure. He or nobody else he knew of had a cure for our disease. And he can't cure it himself. And he said, through a spiritual enlightenment or experience, only can this happen. And as Jung goes on to say, we have to have a huge emotional displacement. We have to give up all our ideas, all our concept, all our opinions to do this. I took that initially to mean that I'll have to sell everything and change my job, change my location, change the woman I'm with, travel the world. But that is not concepts, ideas, and opinions. Again, here I was reaching for the external solution. So where do these words come from? Inside my what? My opinions, ideas, and concepts. Well, they come from inside my mind. This program is completely an inside job. completely. What's happening on the outside makes no difference whatsoever. Because our insides are making us not have what? It's not giving us peace and serenity. My ideas, concepts, opinions are not giving me peace and serenity. The whole idea of this program is to get peace. Not women, not money, not attention. Those outside things bring momentary pleasures. They cost us, and in the end, they cost us a lot of what? If you're a chronic alcoholic, they cause us a lot of grief, pain, remorse, and guilt. And that's what we're getting rid of when we work the steps. So back to the bedevilments. That was caused by our insane thinking. Everything that was black in our life, everything negative. It's like I had a black cloud over me all the time. How at first do we try and get out of this negative thinking, this dark cloud thinking? What did we have to admit? Well, first we admit we're powerless over people, places, and things, including alcohol. Also that our life is unmanageable, meaning that we will never be like normal people, meaning non-alcoholic people. Even though we work these steps, we will never be non-alcoholic or normal, if you would prefer. That delusion has to be completely smashed. That once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Now, I had said in the last podcast, when I was an alcoholic, that was a mistake. I meant to say when I was an active alcoholic in one example that I gave. If you're listening closely, you'll know when I said that. But the truth is, once an alcoholic, that was a misspoke. But once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. We have very sick minds. And I didn't like that when I was new. But until I surrendered to that idea, to that fact, I should say, in More About Alcoholism, the chapter More About Alcoholism explains, and it's written right in there, I couldn't apply these steps. The solution. So the solution is, I got to have a spiritual experience or awakening to change my psyche. So the first I have, the first thing I have to accept is what? After I accept my disease. Is step two. I couldn't restore myself to sanity. No psychiatric individual could. No priest could. And no good person could. Like a sponsor. Because when you put a welly in a sickie, what do you end up with? You end up with two sickies. So if I'm sick and I'm working with someone who's well and they're trying to change me, I bet you anything I get them sick before they get me well. So if you're well and you're trying to help somebody who's sick and they don't want to work this program, you better find someone else, because they'll get you sick before you get them well. In fact, you can't get them well. Only their higher power can. So if your sponsee doesn't want what you have, you better drop them, is my point. Otherwise, your emotions and your thinking will get back to insanity. The well person will go back to insanity. So we need a power greater than ourselves. So where do we find this power? We find it deep inside ourselves. Well, I had never heard that before. I believed in an external punishing God. So I was looking on the outside all the time that I was in trouble or wanted to have some relief. Being an agnostic and growing up in a religion with a punishing God in the heavens with a long white beard, I never saw a spirit was within myself. I never thought a spirit was within myself. In Christianity, they call it the Holy Ghost. So this is a spiritual program, not a religious program. Although spiritual principles like the Holy Ghost is a spiritual principle in a religious program, but that doesn't make AA a religious program. There is no Christ outside of me. I got to find the Christ within me. Now, you can believe in Jesus Christ, but you have to understand that Christ is in you. Just like I said, the Holy Ghost is. So if you're a Christian, looking without is incorrect according to this program. Your God is within you, even if you're religious. When people hear that, first with the agnostics, that I had to work the rest of the steps to believe that. I didn't believe that until I worked the rest of the steps. I still believed in an external God until I got to the steps. We read in the family afterwards, the childishness of our old thinking is transformed into the fact that a higher power is really within. After we work the program, it doesn't matter what we believed before. Through experience, we know that there's no external God. It's internal. Now, the fundamentalist religious person praying a church or to an outside God or through a priest to a pope has the hardest time with this program and probably has disagreed with many things I just said, because they've been told that he's because he's being told he's if he changes it to an inside job, that he's going to hell. And that religion teaches that. A diehard religion is a external God, and if you do consider yourself an inside job in this program, your religion tells you you're going to hell and that you're a sinner. So they're terrified of sinning, and that's why they have the hardest time working and accepting these steps. But what's the only place you can find your higher power according to our literature? It says only in We Agnostics. Only there he can be found. Okay? And we read all of this. I read this already in the prior steps. These are not my words. They're in the big book, so I'm not going to refer to the pages, but it does say only there that your higher power can be found is within you. So if you want to change the program into a religious program, you're more than welcome to. But there are plenty of 12-step programs according to Jesus, according to Judaism, and according to Buddhist. Personally, I have not seen any of them work. Okay? But you can try them if you want to. There's no problem. Some may make it there. But for me, I had to follow exactly what it says here. And that's the word painstaking. So that's what we've done up until this point. And that's the reality of what the book says and the facts of what the literature says. Everything I just said is not my opinion, and the proof is in the book, and the words are in black and white, and I've covered all of the page numbers and all of the paragraphs that correspond with what I just said. So this is a summary of where we're at so far, and if you've done steps 1 through 9 and you're still in your will, that's okay, because the 10th step is about learning and growing. And in order to learn and grow, we have to continue what? We have to continue working this program. So all 12 steps are compact into steps 10, 11, and 12. 1 through 3 is reflection and contemplation and a decision. 4 through 9 is how you deflate your ego and get to God's will. And 10 is where you continue to grow and learn spiritually. And once you also are working 10, you get what? You get emotional balance. Because without emotional balance, you can't do what? You can't make good choices and decisions. Without the ability to make good choices and decisions, you're going to stay in your will, and you're going to be in guilt and remorse, and nothing's going to go your way. And you're going to go back into your negative thinking and your insanity, and the bedevilments will come back, and you'll probably go back out to drinking, or at the very least, stay in your disease and potentially commit suicide. So that's why we're very sick people. Now, if I don't continue working this program, I will get sick again. There is no cure for alcoholism. I can only be a recovered alcoholic. And so, if I choose to stay recovered and I've cleaned up the wreckage of my past, and some amends go on for life, But if I'm continuing to work the steps every single day, I can now say that I'm working 10, 11, and 12, which is all 12 steps. So 1 through 3 I just mentioned is reflection, contemplation, and a decision. 4 through 9 is step 10, summarized into a mini inventory or a long inventory, depending upon what you're trying to treat within you that's wrong on a daily basis. And there's many types of ways to do a 10-step inventory, but they all come down to the same principles in steps 4 through 9. And that's why you can't do a 10-step if you don't understand the moving parts of 4 through 9. So when I'm disturbed, I can do a step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 and get back to whose will right away, promptly. Promptly means that I do it quickly so I can get back to what? Back to God's will and out of my will. Because remember in step 3, we learned how do we get to God's will when we make this decision. Just exactly how do we do that? It says that in step 3 in the 12 and 12. Well, steps 4 through 10 is how we do that. So when I go back into my will during the day, I can do a 10th step. And that's how I continue to learn and grow spiritually. So now we know what the problem is, what the solution is, what the decision we made was, and now we understand our instincts are out of whack and that we need to uncover, discover, and discard our character defects by going over them with another human being, ourselves and God, and then giving them to God in steps 6 and 7 and correcting any wrongs we've done or harms upon others in 8 and 9. And if we've done no harm to others, we forgive them for their derelictions. So we're not in a resentment that they're wrong and stay in self-righteous anger. And that's how you unblock yourself. It's so simple, but it is not easy. And like I said, this is a spiritual program, not a religious one. So what do we do now? Well, we learn about step 10. So with that summary being said, we're going to go back to the big book. And we're going to start reading right after the promises. You'll look at the second full paragraph in the middle of the page. And Bill Wilson goes right into step 10. All right, so now we'll read that paragraph. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So that paragraph summarizes what I set us up for just now in Bill's words. Let's break it down. We're watching for our character defects. Okay, what are our character defects in this paragraph? By watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. We can also watch out for inconsideration of others, self-pity, all of the outcomes of the five core defects we've been going over. But now we're going to have to expand our vocabulary a little bit. Now that you know what the five core defects are, there's lots of outcomes. Resentment is an outcome. Self-pity is an outcome. So if you are experiencing self-pity, what is it that's causing self-pity? Is it your fear of not getting what you want or losing what you have? And if so, fear of what? Fear of economic insecurity? Okay, well, now you know why you're in self-pity. So we need to continue to watch for these things. And when they crop up, We ask God, our higher power, the universe, whatever it is for you as you understand it, to remove it. So you've just done steps 4, 5, 6, and 7 right there. So we have the word continue in here in this paragraph 4 times. So that means that we're not stopping when we do these steps. I hear people in the rooms always say, I done the steps. I did the steps. Now I need to go back and do the steps again. They've missed the entire point. These steps are designed for living. These steps are something we continue to do all the time. I don't know if they're reading the same book I am, but it says right here that we continue to do it 4 separate times. And then when I continue to set right new mistakes as I go along, I commence this way of living. Well, this way of living, this design for living, is the 12-step program. And then I can only claim that I've entered the world of the spirit. I am no longer in my will. I am in the world of the spirit. I've entered the world of the spirit. It finally tells me that. I'm not just having spiritual experiences now. I'm starting to have a spiritual awakening. So when my defects do pop up, maybe I do need to discuss them with somebody immediately. Maybe it's the same old mistake I make all the time. Doesn't always have to be a discussion. If somebody cut me off in traffic, I'm not as fragile as I used to be. I don't need to call my sponsor when I get upset on the road. But I do need to ask my higher power to remove my fear and my anger and my projection of running the guy over who cut me off. Absolutely. And then if I do, you know, go after him, let's say, and harm him, I better make amends for it. I have to love and tolerate other people. Now, does that mean that I like everybody? No, it doesn't. But I have to tolerate them if they're in the same street as me or in the same meeting or in the same building. I have to tolerate their presence. And do I like that person all the time? No, but I have to love them. Why? Why do I have to love everybody? Well, because they are human too, just like you. And other human beings have problems, and other human beings don't always behave in manners that are kind and considerate. And when we take that personally, we want to hate them instead of love them. Well, there's another word. It's dislike. We don't have to like everybody, but we do need to understand that they are also a child of this universe, or a child of God, if you will, and just like you, and they deserve, ultimately, underneath their ego is the same love, kindness, patience, and tolerance that you have underneath yours. So that is what he's saying there. So I have to ask, I have to watch for these things all the time. Every time I go through my day and I'm disturbed, I have to do what this book just said, steps 4 through 9. Okay? So that's where I get that this is a continuation of steps 4 through 9 in that paragraph. So what happens when I do these steps, this step, and I practice it every single day? Well, there's other promises that are rarely read in the rooms. We've read the 9-step promises. If you go to meetings, you've heard the painstaking promises. They probably read them. They're popular. But those are not the end-all, be-all promises of this book. There's another series of promises in step 10. And what happens when we start working step 10 and we start growing in understanding? Okay? We understand... we grow in understanding not by maintaining our spirituality. Well, we do stay spiritually fit by growing. Okay, there's a misconception in the room that this is a maintenance step. Maintenance means that you're the same thing and you're going to maintain that same frame of mind. I am not maintaining the same frame of mind I had when I first walked into AA and when I had 5 years or 10 years. My growing and understanding has changed from when I have 5 years or 10 years. I better be more spiritual in 10 years than I am in 5, and so on. So I'm not maintaining anything. I'm growing in understanding and effectiveness. And if that if somebody doesn't say that, it's not about it. Someone disagrees, you can see, show them on that paragraph we just read, our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So that's spiritual growth. If I'm not growing spiritually, I'm going. It's a grow or go program. I'm growing spiritually or I'm going toward a drink. And so how do I grow spiritually? By living in 10, 11, and 12. So right now we're learning about how to maintain our emotional balance so we're unblocked from our ego and we can actually get connected through to our higher power. So how do we do that? By doing steps 4 through 9 every day. It's not a complete overhaul of the wreckage of our past. It's not as specific of, but it's going through your initial inventory and your harms to others list. That you should be doing in your first couple of years of sobriety. That's how you learn and experience the promises and the spiritual awakening that comes from getting the past behind, putting the past behind you is extremely important. And why we do this step in a continuation is so we don't collect the garbage again and then have to create more damage and have to go and create such a giant inventory list like we did maybe over the last 30 years of our lives. So that's why we continue to do this. So now let's read the third full paragraph at the bottom of the page on 84. And these are what we call the 10th step promises. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, as we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. Explanation point. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So that is the 10th step promises. Remember, alcoholics like to fight. Surrender is not an option if you're an alcoholic when you don't understand your disease. That's the first thing we're doing in step one. So now that we've worked steps 1 through 9, we understand that surrender is the solution. Surrender to what? To our higher power. And knowing that we don't control other people, places, things, or situations to the extent that we would like. There are certain things we can change. There are certain conditions we can change, but we can't fight everything and anyone. It says anything or anyone. We've stopped doing that. Even alcohol. All right. So we were powerless over alcohol, but other people, places, things, and situations are also things we're powerless over. So we stop fighting that. And alcohol, which is the reason that we're in this program in the first place, is because we were fighting alcohol. We wanted to control it. So now he says that this time sanity will have returned. Okay. Well, there's no mention of sanity returning until we get to step 10 in this book. So even though that you may be on step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, your sanity has not returned. All right, you're still insane. You still can't control your emotional nature. The only time you start to control your emotional nature is once you've cleaned up the wreckage of your past and you start practicing step 10 every day. And then your sanity starts to return. You've started having spiritual experiences in all the other steps, in all the promises. There's like 167 promises in this book. And now these are the 10th step promises. And now he's promising your sanity has been returned. So you had to go through step 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 before you are restored to sanity. All right, so you're very, very much in a position of the alcohol problem being removed. All right, you could have gone back to drinking in steps 2 through 9 very easily by not continuing with the rest of the program. Your spiritual intoxication would have worn off. And you would have not been able to maintain any emotional balance because you didn't achieve it in step 10, and you'll easily get spooked back into drinking. So we are very much in step 10 when we have no interest in liquor whatsoever. It says seldom. So, you know, I mean, I guess there are times where, you know, liquor may seem of an interesting thing, but if we're tempted to it, we recoil from it just like if we were to put our hand over a hot flame. It's very fleeting, and we realize right away that it is not an option for us. We cannot have it. But we react normally and sanely. Again, he says sanely. And we will find that the drink problem is removed automatically. We don't have to white knuckle it. We have a new attitude towards liquor. All right. Without any effort whatsoever, don't need to white knuckle and stay away from places that serve alcohol because we may be tempted. If we have a reason to be somewhere other than drink, obviously, we can go into that establishment and not think twice that we're going to have a drink. And this just comes. This is what we've been working for. This is what this is all about. But there's so many more gifts that come with it, which is why he calls it a miracle. It's a gift. A miracle is a gift. And we're not fighting alcohol. We're not avoiding the temptation. We're not, you know, in a position of where we're thinking, I won't drink. Okay, there's a difference between saying I won't drink and I can't drink. Won't drink is like a proclamation of war. I won't do this. By God, I won't. That's, you know, a demand of yourself. But I can't drink is understanding that that's the truth of the matter. You have a disease and you can't drink because you have a allergic reaction to alcohol. But now the mental obsession is removed, which is really the miracle of this. God has removed the mental obsession. Your higher power has removed it from you. You are now safe and protected in its realm. All right. You don't even need to swear it off like you did when you were, you know, hungover. The problem is gone. It's removed. It just simply doesn't exist anymore. The obsession to drink is gone. And you're not cocky about it. You're not going around bragging about it. And you're like, look at me, I'm not drinking. And nor are you afraid to be around alcohol or other people drinking if there's a reason for being there. Remember, alcohol is in our society. We can't change that. There's going to be a liquor ads. There's going to be a billboards. There's going to be people drinking. And we can't be afraid of living life and lock ourselves up in order to avoid it. So that is what the first 100 experienced and millions of others who followed them. So this is how we react about alcohol, only if there's an if here, as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And so I can't stay in fit spiritual condition unless I continue to work the steps, specifically live in 10, 11, and 12. All right. So what happens if I do decide to let up on my program? I've done enough. I'm feeling great. The alcohol problem is gone. I do feel the 10th step promises are true. Now, what do I do if I stop working this program and I'm a chronic alcoholic? Well, it says that there's no cure for my disease. We're never cured of alcoholism. So what happens if I stop working these steps? All right. If you don't believe me that we're not cured of alcoholism, let's read the next paragraph. 85, second full paragraph. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. There you are. There's your sentence. We are not cured of alcoholism. And just to make sure that you understand what the word cured means is relieve of the symptoms of a disease or condition. So we are not relieved ever of this condition or disease. It is never removed entirely. The symptoms can be arrested on a daily basis. They cannot be cured just because we work the steps once. So that's very important. To continue, what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Now, that's where people get that word maintenance confused with on page 84, where it says grow in understanding and effectiveness. So, yes, I need to maintain my spiritual condition. How do I do that? By growing in understanding and effectiveness. So I can't just maintain where I'm at today and stay stagnant spiritually and say, that's it, I'm spiritual enough, I'm done. There is no stagnation. I have to continue to maintain spiritual condition by growing in understanding and effectiveness. And that can confuse a lot of people when they see the word maintenance. To clear that up. Continuing, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. All right, so carrying out God's will is what I'm trying to accomplish. That is towards the end of the step. The steps is in step 11. What am I praying for? I'm praying for knowledge of God's will, only knowledge of God's will, and the power to carry that out. All right. So that is why I'm doing the 10th step. So I can be emotionally balanced, unblocked from my ego. And when I'm unblocked from my ego, I'm spiritually fit. I'm maintaining my spiritual condition. But in order to do that, when I uncover that I'm selfish in areas that I didn't realize before, maybe 3 years ago, I didn't realize I was selfish in certain things. But 3 years later, I realize that I am now. So that's not maintenance, that's growth. So no one's saying that I need to do this overnight, but I have to continue to work at it. So I can continue to what they used to, my sponsor used to say, is peel back the onion. There's always another layer under there that I'm uncovering, discovering, and discarding when it comes to my character defects. So if I don't continue to do that and maintain my spiritual condition, my disease will resurrect and my bedevilments will come back. So that's why I'm not cured of alcoholism, and that's why I'm not a non-alcoholic. A non-alcoholic can work other programs and not go to extremes and have their disease resurrect to a point where they want to die or go back to drinking. That's why I'll never be like normal people, which is, again, a non-alcoholic. So every single day, it says every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will. God's will for me may be different than it is for you, but I need to carry it into all of our activities. Now, God's will for a chronic alcoholic up until this point, there's no other program that I know of that gets me or any other alcoholic to God's will. So these steps I do know are God's will for every alcoholic who wants to recover. And if they do this work, 100% of those people will recover from this disease. So if that's not God's will, I don't know what is. But once you have uncovered your will, for God's will for you as an individual, then you carry that out into all your activities. Now, that may mean that I go in different career paths, I get married, I don't get married, I get a job in my old career or a new career. You know, these are things and choices and decisions each one of us can only make for ourselves. But we do know that we're going to be making them when we're God conscious as opposed to egocentric. And that's the difference. We can make better choices and decisions when we're in God consciousness. And that will lead us to being other-centered. You know, when we work with others in 12 and we make amends in 8 and 9, you know, we understand that we're not here just to serve our own self-interest. God put us here to help others. And so how can I best serve my higher power is typically going to be how I can help other people. And these are thoughts that must go with me constantly, go with us constantly. And my will can be used to line up with God's will all I wish. It says that's the proper use of the will. So I can, you know, if I have one will on this earth, it's to not make more money, not get more power, not have more sex, not more control, not more prestige, not to be president of the United States, or to have all of the, to be a dictator, or to control everything I, you know, I come in contact, everyone I come in contact with. No, that is not a proper use of my will. A proper use of my will is to line my will with God's will. I can exercise that willpower all I wish. Okay, how much spirituality do I want is the question. And the more that I get, the happier, more joyful, and more free that I become. And that's how I stay disciplined. You know, other people don't discipline me. Other people have tried to discipline me. Society doesn't discipline me. I can't even discipline myself. My higher power disciplines me. My higher power disciplines me, and I don't mean in a way where he beats me with a stick. I'm talking about how the discipline comes is I experience pain when I'm not in God's will. I really do. I may not be beaten with a stick, but I certainly feel the mental and emotional anguish coming back and pain when I don't do this. And my spiritual condition dissipates, and my ego resurrects, and I become an emotional, mental basket case. And that's the pain I experience. And when I know that that happens, I grow spiritually towards God's will again when I start doing a 10th step and figuring out what's blocking me from my higher power. Because it's always going to be some instinct out of whack and leading to a character flaw. And leading to other outcomes like self-pity, resentment, and fear. So this is why I continue to work this step every single day. So now what do we do once we have God consciousness? All right, it says in the next paragraph, we're not going to get into step 11, but Bill's going to lead us into it. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. All right, well, so we're far done from step 10, by the way, everybody out there. But this is where he says, again, directions. Remember I said they wanted to use the word suggestions in that business meeting. If you've been listening to my podcast, you'll know what I'm talking about. Here he is, snuck in the word, following directions. Now we begin to sense flow of his spirit, which capital H could be anything you want, higher power spirit, into you. Not out, not from without, but into you. So to some extent, we have become God conscious. So you're starting to feel conscious contact with your higher power by doing 10th steps. So now you have a sixth sense and you need to learn how to grow it. But there are a lot more things about the 10th step that we need to discuss in the 12 and 12 before we can move on to step 11. Because what happens when we read something in here, we rationalize and we justify. And I really think that Bill wrote this extra supplement in the 12 and 12 to deal with that alcoholic thinking of rationalizing and justifying. And changing the program to something that he did not mean. Remember, they had about 20 years of experience without the 12 and 12, and Bill Wilson started to see that further authentication was necessary after all. I do read the first paragraph of the foreword of every podcast, and he does say it is our hope that no further authentication will be necessary. Well, unfortunately, yes, further authentication was necessary in the 50s. Why? Because I said earlier in this program, people were turning this into a Bible. They were making it, biblifying is the word, turning it into a religious program. They wanted, some people were going backward and saying, let's go back to reading Sermon on the Mount. You know, that was before they had the steps. And that Emmett Fox book, Sermon on the Mount, is not a is not the 12 steps of recovery. They were learning about this program, and Christians wanted their own religious 12-step program after the 12 steps was written, and it wasn't working. I know a lot of people who study that book, and there's a lot of principles in there that are in here, but what I had said earlier is that it's an external God at the end of the day that's punishing, and you're living in sin if you believe God is within you. So that is a vital part of this program. That God flows through you is not without, and everybody has a higher power or the drop of God in them, and there is no chain of command to get to it. You do not have to go through a bishop and a pope to get to your higher power. That is what actually Jesus was trying to teach as well, that your higher power is within you. Jesus is within you, the Holy Ghost. So even in their directions, or if you will, the Bible, it talks about that. But the dogma is extremely, extremely contradictory to the spiritual principles. Why? Because religion has control motivations to control societies. And what better way to do that than to add dogma to principles and spirituality that has already existed well before those texts were written? So even these Christians were humble enough to do the best they could with what they knew, based on the fact that some of them were born in the 1800s, and still Bill was very clear about the fact that his religious beliefs were childish in nature. And if you don't believe me, and incorrect, and if you don't believe me, go back to page 135, I believe it is, in the family afterwards, where it's actually not page 135. It's on page 130, where it says, those of us who have spent much time in the world of spiritual make-believe have eventually seen the childishness of it. This dream world has been replaced by a great sense of purpose, accompanied by a growing consciousness of the power of God in our lives. We've come to believe he would like us to keep our heads in the cloud with him, but that our feet ought to be firmly planted on earth. This is where our fellow travelers are. That is where our work must be done. These are the realities for us. We have found nothing incompatible between a powerful spiritual experience and a life of sane and happy usefulness. So that means that we need to accept reality and worldly conditions just as much as the higher power is a real living force that resides within all of us. And we have to cast aside what we learned when we were children by ministers, rabbis, priests, and the like. So that is where we are. Now you have somewhat God consciousness. And if you do, you believe that your higher power is an inner resource, like it says in the back of the book, in the appendix, and as it also says in We Agnostics. Hopefully your open-mindedness will grow from here, and you'll be able to understand how to enhance your God consciousness in 11 when we get there. But for now, we're going to go into step 10 in the 12 and 12. Obviously, that'll be on the next podcast where we'll discuss some of the things that prevent us from accepting the 10th step and what we need to do in order to flourish in step 10. So God bless. This was an informative podcast for me as well. I'm touching on a lot of things here. We need to grow up. We need to put away our childishness and become adults. And that's what we're doing in when we get into steps 10, 11, and 12. So God bless. Love you all. Until next time. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.